Welcome to Failing Up. We don't have a theme song.
Well, we might not have a theme song, Eden, but we do have a theme, and that is failure.
And we talk to people about their failures and mistakes and how they grew from it.
Simple as that. Listen up.
So thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Failing Up. And Eden, thank you for having us here in your lovely podcast studio.
Thanks. Sitting in my podcast studio.
It's wonderful with the Beverly Hills themed wallpaper.
Although we're not in Beverly Hills.
Almost psych. Completed. We're close. Why tell people though? They don't know.
I know. Well, all right. Live in the mystery.
So as we know, I'm Guy and Eden is here.
I am here.
With us. And of course we have a guest this week and you've probably read it already on the... You know, the marquee of the, is that what it's called?
The clickable link.
Exactly. And his name is going to lead before our names because it's Mr. Steve Agee who is joining us on the show. Thank you. Whoa, listen to that applause.
Are you putting wallpaper up or taking it down?
All right. So, you know, we should just address this.
We should address it every episode.
I've been telling guests this when they leave and they ask about
it. 3/4 of a wallpaper.
All right. So, everybody, I really love the Beverly Hills Hotel wallpaper. If you look it up, it's all these banana leaves.
Oh, look up any picture that we've taken for the show. It's
exactly.
That's
what
it is.
If you guys are really fans, then you would know the wallpaper. So, I was like, the rest of my house is going to be one kind of theme. But my little office / podcast studio / place I sleep when it gets too hot is going to be like completely wallpapered. I'm going to have like this whole cool theme. I'm going to have a pink chair and like awesome art and a neon sign. So I get this wallpaper from Etsy and it's peel and stick thinking I don't want to ruin my walls. And this peel and stick is shit quality. And so it's kind of peeling off.
It looks like peel and peel.
I know. So, but not only that, the company I bought it on Etsy from, based in Canada, you know, I put up the wallpaper and I didn't have enough rolls. So I tried to order some more and they're like, oh, so sorry. We actually got sued by the company that makes the wallpaper because it's a copyrighted art. So could you like pick some other like wallpaper you like? And I'm like, no, I have half a really dope room set up that everybody's been commenting on. It's like a thing.
There's nothing you could paint the room green, I guess.
And I'm like, I know. So I'm still kind of in a conundrum. It's just so cool. I don't know.
Can you have the other company send you?
They're really expensive. They're like,
well, you only need half of an order.
They're like, okay, guys, by the way, if you ever see someone with wallpaper in their house, they're so fucking rich or privileged. Like, luckily, this wallpaper, I did a very Jewish mom thing and I went like apeshit on them. I was like, oh my gosh, I have like half my office money. And they were like, all right, we'll refund you all the money.
Wow.
So luckily, they refunded me everything. But like each roll was like $90.
Wow.
I know. And I thought, I was like, oh, I only need this many rolls. But nope, I need like 25 rolls.
Yeah.
Anyway, they refunded me everything. And now I'm stuck with this. And I'm not sure what to do. And meanwhile, my stuff's not hung up. I have like a board for like writers.
Behind Steam is
artist,
get an artist
to copy the rest of it.
Ooh. That'll cost a lot of money. I mean, let me just sell my show. Let me get like a job. Oh, but okay.
That's
so,
how you'll know.
But let me just follow up because I'm sure if someone listened to the podcast last week.
Oh, yeah.
Let's address this.
So really, we just did not get to promote it like we properly would because of the insane news cycle.
I know.
But Rafael Casal was awesome, and his movie, everybody goes, see it, Blindspotting. He was awesome, and because of the craziness of what happened in the news cycle this week, we got really lazy. We're not promoting on Thursday with the whole Kavanaugh hearing.
Yeah.
And then Friday, you know, the news cycle didn't really calm down.
So we waited till the weekend to promote. Sorry, everyone. Yeah. But, so if you listen to it, I started the podcast with reading a rejection letter.
Yes.
So I sent an essay to the New York Times. You know, they have Modern Love.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I sent it to this new one they have called Rites of Passage, because I don't have good love stories. Not happened to me. No one loves me. Anyway, I had a good Rites of Passage story. I thought I did. And they sent me this, like, really short rejection letter written by two people.
Yeah.
Which was, I know, that's what our other guest
was
like.
What is that?
I know, yeah. Same reaction. So... I was kind of feeling down on myself. Well, it's like a huge deal, you know.
Yeah.
I just was like kind of. It just was a really personal story, so I just felt like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
But then In the middle of the week, I signed with like an amazing agency.
Congrats.
I'm so happy. Congrats. Awesome. And they loved my pilot that I wrote that was very, very personal. And they circulated it to their colleagues and they all liked it. So I felt a lot better. So you see people, you have to fail a few times. And then sometimes someone will think your stuff's great.
We should do a podcast about that.
Yeah.
That's about failing first before you succeed.
Well, that's kind of what we, yeah.
It's almost like
your
ours. Podcast come to life.
Yeah.
So yeah,
life imitating art.
But there now I'm scared. I'm gonna be like, I told Guy this. I'm gonna be like the poorest people on their roster.
Well, I mean, in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
But what does it matter?
At the end of the day, everyone there is gonna pull up in a Tesla, and I'm gonna go in my like fucking leased Chevy. And
Chevy Cobalt.
It's a Chevy Volt.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
It's an okay car.
There you go.
Yeah. But
I also it's
very respectable.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I don't pay for gas.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not here to promote my car.
Are you sure?
Do you want to introduce the guest? Oh, did we just?
God.
I'm done talking about myself, everybody.
What, early on, Steve, did you ever have your name pronounced wrong?
Oh, constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that in the shower
today. I think like a long time ago, I saw you at the Nerd Melt. When it was open. I think there was the kind of host who I've never seen before in my life, and they were kind of newish, and they introduced you, and I'm like, that can't be right.
Did they say, everyone says a G?
Yeah, that's what I would think is the incorrect.
I think they said like a jar even or something.
Oh my
like
gosh.
That. I forgot. I remember it was really off, and I'm like, who's this guy? Oh, him. Okay.
I once did a show at the Improv, and it was the night I met Rory Scovel, who's like one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. And this is probably like close to 10 years ago, and Rory was going to host. I think he had just moved to L.A. And the sound guy was about to introduce Rory to go up and host the show, and he's like, hey, what's your name? What's your name again? And he goes, Rory Scovel. He goes, you can just say Rory. And the guy's like, no, I'll write it down. And he wrote it down. And then he wrote it down. Rory Scovel writes it down and then goes, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for your host, Rummer Slingle. Like, way off on both names, didn't get Rory right. He said something like Rumber or Runner, Scundle or Scrimble.
It's not that hard. It's really not that hard.
He's not a character in Lord
of
the Rings.
There's other comics that have much harder names.
Yeah.
He's not even ethnic.
Yeah. Like, well, you know, my last name is Opachinski, so
that's kind of hard.
Yeah, so that's why
Polish.
It's Polish, and that's why I just say to people, just say guy. It's fine. You know, a lot of times on the phones, I'll just say guy, and then okay, Mr. Guy. I'm like, well, no, it's just guy. I've also had guy confused though. Like I tell the story sometimes where in Spanish, he is fine. It's French, but in Spanish there is no GUI. It's hoy, right? So they get very confused, and a lot of times when I'm in a restaurant and they're calling my name, I'll be like, gay, and I'm like, oh, there's somebody here named Gay, and then they're like, gay, two cheese, double cheeseburger. I'm like, oh, I'm gay, I guess. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's
I know, now you're like, oh, no, it's totally fine, but I'm not.
I've had hui, yeah, hui.
That's
hui.
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 That sounds like someone punched you, and that's the noise you make.
Happy Shabbos, hui.
Exactly. But the worst name, I just thought about this years and years ago, red carpet. We have somebody who's actually running the red carpet where, you know, me and my friend are on there. And this guy says, oh, do you want to talk to this guy? And we look at him, we're like, yeah. And he says, well, what's his name again? And he says the name, and my friend comes on and he repeats the name and he says, Brett Poshin. And the guy looks at us and he goes, Brian Posehn.
Oh.
Brian's last name gets slaughtered.
It gets, yeah.
Posehn.
Yeah, so we got Brett Poshin, though.
Well, no, everybody pronounces my name wrong, but they should.
Eden, right?
Yeah.
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 I had someone, I told Guy this too, like this powerful exec call me on the phone and I couldn't answer it. So he went to my voicemail. My voicemail is really mean. It's like, hi, you've reached Eden. I either can't come to the phone or I don't like you. Bye. So he was like, very funny, but like, oh my God, I've been calling your name wrong. I feel like such a jerk for like a year now. And yeah. I'm like, that's because you're important. Like, if you're important, I don't correct you. Yeah. I'll be what I'll be.
I went through a whole year of boarding school never correcting anyone. They called me a G for, and it was a military it was military school, so they go wow. by last names.
Yeah.
So the whole year it was a G, and I just didn't give a shit. I didn't correct anybody until graduation. I go, it's actually a G. Well, when they announced me to get my diploma,
that's
Steve
hilarious.
A G, and I walked up and I said, it's actually a G.
Well, because you got nothing. It's like the last hurrah before you quit a company.
Yeah. Yeah,
you, it's might, like, as well. You might as well.
P.S. Yeah. Fuck you.
I know, right? Yeah. Anyway.
We should back it up to the beginning. So a young Steve, you're born in Riverside.
Yeah.
Steve, that's
exciting. An hour away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so were you just raised in California? Did you ever move out?
I lived in New York for a year in 93, and I lived in Ashland, Oregon for a year in 97.
Okay. All right. And what did a young Steve Agee want to do? What did you think you were going
to
be?
I wanted to be a comedian and actor since I was like 10 years old.
That always amazes me. Like, I tell Ed and Eric all the time, I'm like, I wanted to be a magician, and I.
Yeah, and true. I'm always like, I wanted to be a fucking witch.
Yeah, like we don't know. How do you know?
I really, I don't know. I'm a creative person. I feel like I always want things that are fantastical and like impossible. Like, I just want to fucking slay dragons. You know, I don't want anything real. But
I mean, I always loved comedy and comedic TV shows and all this stuff, and I thought I was funny, but I never thought I could do that, you know, especially a comedian, like watching the George
when
Carlin,
I was 11 years old, the first album I bought with my own money, first recorded album.
Please say Cosby.
I bought with with my money was George Carlin, place for my stuff. I was like 11.
Mine was Weird Al, but I will say the first comedy I ever saw live was George Carlin at 13. I walked out with a shirt. On the back it said, Simon Says Go Fuck Yourself, which was awesome. But the best part, because my parents were so cool, the best part was, I remember still today, laying in bed, he closed out his set with Every Dirty Word Ever. You know, that was one of his things. I'm 13. I'm laying in bed.
The incomplete list of impolite words.
What's a blumpkin? Like, just wonder, because he just rattles off, like, literally every dirty word you know, and still today, probably words I don't know. And it was like, it blew my fucking mind. It was so great.
Wow, that's amazing. You were 13. Yeah. I never saw him live.
Oh, really?
It bums me out.
I got to see him one other time when I was 21. My parents are big Atlantic City people. And they're like, oh, you know, we have tickets for George Carlin. Great. Me and my friend go. We're sitting pretty close.
Wow.
Like 15 minutes in, I shit you not, like half the audience is leaving. But it's all old people. And clearly they got free tickets. Yeah. They had no idea who George Carlin was.
Yes.
And I'm not kidding. Half the fucking audience left. But
sure.
He blew it out. I mean, he was George Carlin. Yeah. He blew it out. It was, two of the best shows. Him and, I mean, I hate to put him in the same, but I really do think he was amazing. Chappelle, to me, was like one of those guys that like blew my fucking mind.
Yeah, I, as a gift, I can't remember if it was for my birthday or Christmas, I got a transistor radio and it had a mono earpiece.
Yeah.
Just like went into one ear, and I would lay in bed on Sunday nights. I would go to bed and listen to Dr. Demento from like 8 to midnight or 8 to 11. And that's how I learned about George Carlin, Weird Al, like every comedian.
And you knew that's just what you have to do?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was George Carlin was my idol and John Ritter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
And I knew early on that's what I wanted to do.
How does one that knows so early on exactly what they want to do go? Like, I'm sure your parents didn't take that well. Like,
yeah.
No. In fact, I wanted to from that age, but I honestly didn't think it was possible. I thought you have to be born into a family of performers or like go to school. I was young. I didn't understand. I was like, well, my dad's a doctor, my mom's a nurse. No one in my family is artistic at all, so that'll never happen.
Yeah. So the plan. So really, you wanted to be a comedian, but was there a backup plan for that? Like,
no, there was no backup plan. I went to college just because my friends went to college, and I didn't want to go to college.
Yeah.
But I was like, I guess I have to.
What everybody's doing.
I'm 18. I have to figure out. I'm not going to be an actor or a comedian. I got to figure something out. And so I was an undeclared major for a year. And then I had, first year I was a biology major.
Okay.
So I was like, maybe I can be, oh no, I wanted to be a marine biologist.
Okay.
And after a semester of biology class, I failed straight across the board, gave myself ulcers from studying.
Oh my goodness.
And went the rest of the year undecided. And then my friend Sam, my best friend Sam, who was like, dude, just be an art major. You can bullshit your way through a degree. I was like, all right.
That's true.
That's kind of, I mean, it's not a performer, but it's artistic. And so yeah. I got a fucking degree in painting.
Wow.
It shows.
Never painted. So if you want me to fix these blank walls here.
I think he was hawking his services earlier.
Yeah.
He was saying a painter should come and fix this for you. So are you like a good student in high school?
Horrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got kicked out of two high schools, which is how I ended up at military school in Philadelphia.
What were you not a good listener? What was it? You're like, fuck it, I'm going to be a comedian.
I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't.
Did you have ADD? Or ADHD?
I was never diagnosed with it, but I was never tested either.
Oh, okay. Right.
But I never had any interest in scholastics. I literally just wanted to listen to comedy and watch TV, and specifically comedy, not drama, but like,
right.
It's all I wanted to do. And then when I was about 18, my mom, of all people, gave me a clipping out of the paper about like an open mic stand up. And I was like, oh shit, anyone can do this? And I went and I wrote like 3 minutes of horrible jokes and went and did it, brought a bunch of friends. So of course it sounded great.
Right.
And they're like, oh, you should come back next week. And so I did stand up off and on for a long time. And got an art degree.
But no, like, school plays? You weren't that guy?
No, I did. I wanted to when I was in high school. But, like, all those people got made fun of. They were all yes. nerds. And I desperately wanted to be included in that and do plays. And I was terrified of it.
Were you popular? Did you have a lot of friends as a young man?
I was just kind of blended in. I was a wallflower. Yeah, I wasn't.
Yeah.
Bullied, but I also wasn't like the most popular dude
right.
in school.
You didn't score the winning touchdown in any game or anything like that. No. Did you play any sports?
Yeah, I played basketball, football, and track.
Of course you did. You're so tall.
Yeah.
I know you can't hear it, everybody.
Which is just annoying as a tall person.
6'6",
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to play basketball because of
your height. Well, with me, they're just like, oh, you must be unathletic because you're short. And I'm like, absolutely.
You must do gymnastics.
I do get that a lot.
Yeah.
Did you do sports at all?
I did like volleyball, but I wasn't very good at it.
Right.
And swimming because it didn't involve a ball. And
right.
I was better at that. Mm-hmm. I did like ballet for a very long time, but then my hips broke.
What?
I don't want to get into it. This isn't about me. When I was 19.
Well, that's going to be on my podcast.
When I was 19, I couldn't walk one day. And I was crawling. I had to move my car. This is such a funny story. It was street cleaning day at my dad's house. I was home from college and I couldn't, and my dad called me on the phone. He's like, it's noon. I overslept. He's like, you got to move your car. It's street cleaning day. And I'm like, oh, right. I get up and I can't move. My hips really hurt. I can't walk. So I literally crawled to my car outside. And I moved it. And I'm like, Dad, I think I got to go to the ER or something. And they did an x-ray of my pelvis. It wasn't like broken, but it looked like a mosaic. A lot of hairline fractures.
Whoa.
Fuck.
I know. It's crazy. And the crazy thing is like, I basically just, the way they like dealt with it, they didn't want to do surgery. Mm-hmm. They just gave me all these pills and stuff. And I was like on bed rest for like 6 months.
Wow.
Not 6 months, but like I was just
pills for like to boost your bone density and stuff. Yeah.
Huh. And like, no, I was allowed to swim and maybe do cycling, but I couldn't do any weight bearing activities. Like I couldn't put like weight on I couldn't walk and run. Definitely not run.
Sounds awful.
Definitely not ballet. Definitely not. Yeah. So anyway, but
wow, that's my fascinating.
But so when you're done with college and you have this art degree now and this like love for comedy, how are you like, how do I make money?
Well, it's so funny. Sorry, I just whipped you in the neck with a mic
Please
cord.
Please do. And kill me next time.
She likes that.
While I was in college, I was really good at bullshitting my way through art classes. Like, I would just do abstract, that whole bullshit about, well, this is what this means. And because I was good, didn't know I was good at improv. And I would improv in all these classes going, well, actually, it's da, 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 da. And I got like a scholarship one year to take a year off and go anywhere I wanted to study art.
Whoa.
So where'd you go?
That's huge.
I went to New York. I really wanted to go to New York. But I wanted to go to New York to see theater and like comedy.
Right.
No, I didn't. I was like, I got to get to New York. And me and my girlfriend, who was a photography major, moved to this really small studio in Manhattan. And I just enrolled in the Art Students League, which was on like West 57th or something like that, over near the Hard Rock or the Russian Tea Room, I think it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's right in that midtown area. Yeah. And I would take like one class a week.
Jesus.
And the rest of the time I would just fucking go to museums and plays and like,
That's cool.
Just fucking love New York so much. But I went through that money so fucking fast.
Of course. In New York, it's like 5 days and you're out of money.
God. Yeah. It was, we made no plans in going there. We're like, we're going to New York next week.
Oh, geez.
Like I didn't, and there was no internet. I couldn't look for an apartment. We just,
and like a Coke costs $8 there.
We land at JFK and just get in a cab. And we're like, take us to Manhattan.
Oh my God. This sounds like a movie.
This is 93.
Oh, so like it wasn't that bad. It's not like now.
No.
Where you have to be a literal billionaire to have like a cupboard.
So we get a hotel in like, you know, the village or somewhere in South Manhattan. And every day we would wake up and get a paper and check, you know, the want ads for apartments. And we'd call, and every single one we'd call, they'd say, oh, we just rented it. Sorry.
Yeah, of course.
And this went on for two. We were in a hotel just burning through money for 2 weeks trying to find a place to live. And finally, a woman answered, and she's like, oh, I'm showing it later this afternoon, but if you can come before, I'll give it to you. And so we just went to this place on East 61st by Bloomingdale's, and it was maybe the size of two of these rooms we're in right now. And it was like, I think, $1,300 a month.
Jesus.
With an AC that didn't work.
Of course.
But I loved it. I had so much fun in the...
I think
6 or 7 months.
New York
that I
is
lasted.
Super fun if you're either super rich or super poor. Yeah.
And in the 90s, at that time, it was kind of going through a transition. It was not shitty anymore, like not scary to go into the city.
Yeah,
but it still wasn't like, you know, Disneyfied and like, you know, Times Square wasn't closed down for fucking pedestrian traffic and
stuff.
Oh,
God. Right. Yeah, I remember that.
That was a very pure time.
Yeah,
did you
pure.
Live in New York?
I did between high school and like college. I did like a semester at NYU.
Yeah, yeah.
I think everyone needs to like go live there for a little bit.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. I think it could hurt.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I love living in LA. Don't get me wrong. I love LA, and I don't think I can permanently live anywhere else.
Me too, yeah.
But I did appreciate living there. It was fun to live there. It had, you know, I missed a lot of stuff about LA that there I was just like, fuck. Like going grocery shopping is like a schlep.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
It's better now because you can just order all
exactly.
the time.
Exactly. It's just you don't use Prime now anyway, right?
I know. I used to go to like, you know, I used to go to the grocery store and I can only carry so much.
Yeah.
So it was just like, all right, I guess I'm getting 5 things.
Yeah. And this was before I had even lived in LA.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I went to New York first, then came back and finished school. And then my girlfriend got accepted into CalArts for the photography program, and so we moved to LA. And
what, were you working during this time?
No, well, I just graduated, and I just did not. I still wanted to like act and do comedy and stuff. And I, for some reason, I was like, if I get a fucking job, it's gonna ruin all that shit. And so I was like, I gotta find more school to go to, and I enrolled at the Musicians Institute in Hollywood in the bass program. Because I had been playing in bands. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I make every artistic poor choice? Like, art isn't going to work out. I'll do something stable, like be a bass player.
Now, are you practicing comedy at any point throughout this period?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, off and on. You know, I would just do open mics and stuff. And there was a guy at the Ice House named Dave McNary who really liked me and who would always give me sets when I wanted to.
I feel like it always takes, like, as a stand-up, it always takes, listen, when you're starting out, you have to have, like, one guy who runs a show who, like, believes in you.
Yeah, yeah, for real.
Like, who's like, they're not great, but maybe with some time, I'll get them there.
Yeah,
they
or, just need to get up or they're not great, but he brings people.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah, yeah.
They tip.
So you're a bassist, I guess.
So we're living...
Weird.
I guess.
We had the most dope apartment. Oh, cool. Right off Sunset Boulevard behind Spago used to be on Sunset right next to the old Tower Records. Mm-hmm. And our apartment was directly behind Spago. We had a big ass balcony that looked out over Sunset Boulevard.
Whoa.
Like, I'm sure that apartment is now $3,500 a month. And we were paying like $900.
Wow.
And she would go to CalArts and I would go to, you know, Musicians Institute. And I was playing in bands the whole time. And it was fucking great. How not making money. I was, you know, would work at like Starbucks and stuff. And then I finished school at the Musicians Institute. And the day, I think it was the day I finished or that night, I'm laying in bed with my girlfriend. She's like, I think we should break up.
Oh,
and I was like, fuck.
It's like a movie.
Where the fuck? We dated for like 6 years and it like came out of nowhere. And I was just like, what? And she then moved back to Sacramento where she was from. And then I was just like, well, how am I going to afford to live in LA by myself now? I was like desperate. And luckily one of my teachers at the Musicians Institute had a spare room and he like rented it to me. Hmm. And it was just such a weird, shitty time playing in weird bands and like not having a lot of friends in LA. And
right then and there, are you like, I'm going to be a musician for a living? You're just not sure where you're going to be?
No, I saw the writing on the wall very early on with music. I was like, oh, this is, I can't even rely on myself. I have to rely on a whole band.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I eventually moved in with my friend Sam, who was the same guy who told me to be an art major. Uh-huh. I've known him since I was 14. He still lives down.
That's a giving advice, but okay.
Yeah, I've known Sam for like 40 years or like 35 years. So we got a loft downtown, and I lived with him for a long time, and he was a photographer as well, and took a photo of some theater group for this playbill, for a play they were doing, and I went to the opening night of the play with him, and I met this girl I had a huge crush on, and we started dating, and she was taking classes at the Groundlings, and I went with her one night to a show, and I was like, this is what I should be doing.
Yeah.
This is...
Yeah.
And I knew the Groundlings history already because of Saturday Night Live. Sure. And I took to that place like a duck to water. It was, I don't think there was a day I spent away from that place for like 5 years.
Really? Wow.
I would work there to pay for classes and just go watch shows all the time. And
now when you go there, do you just know everyone and you're like a celebrity almost? Or
now? Yes. I never go there anymore. They kicked me out.
Oh, no.
After like five, because you do it's classes.
Right. Yeah.
It's like UCB, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's either UCB or Groundlings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's four levels of classes and it takes, you know, like 4 or 5 years. And I did the final year of classes and you do two shows for your final, your advanced level, you know, sketch writing class. And all the company members have to come to both shows to be able to vote on who they want to vote in or to the Sunday company. And we did the first show and it was great. And then you write for like 6 more weeks and then do another show. The only people that can vote on you are the people that have been to see both of your shows. And the night of our second show, there was a bomb scare on Melrose. And so they had to evacuate the whole block.
Oh, my God.
So we couldn't do the show that night. We had to reschedule it for another night. And the night that we rescheduled it for, only like 2 or 3 people came to the show. So I think only 2 or 3 people voted.
Oh, my God.
And they were not
they didn't
fond
like you.
Of me.
Yeah.
And then it was just, it was so insane. That changed my life so much. That one thing, probably more than anything, changed my life because...
Were you devastated?
devastated. Yeah. I can't even put into words. I got most of my friends who I'm still friends with now, I met there. I was in that class I was in with Maya Rudolph, a bunch of people who went on to write at SNL. You know, I was there with Will Forte and these people who I'm still like great friends with now. And then all of a sudden, you get a phone call when you're there every day of your life for 5 years.
It's pretty messed up, actually.
And you get a phone call from your teacher going, your teacher crying, by the way, going, you're the last person I called because this is the hardest call.
Oh.
And then...
why did I even disclose that to you?
And then we hang up and I'm just like, what the fuck do I do now? You wake up the next day and you're like... well, normally I would be going to the Groundlings right now. What the fuck do I do? Huh. I became so depressed. I was dating this girl, and she was like, you have to see a therapist. Like, you are so depressed, it's frightening. And that's how I got into therapy. That was a life-changing event on its own. Just, you know, it got me to go to therapy. But also, you know, a lot of people that were in classes there that went on to the Sunday company and even into the main company just stay there.
Yeah.
They will stay there for decades. And you see them in commercials now and then or guest starring on shows, but it's like that it becomes their life. That's their world, which isn't a bad way to exist, but you know, there's so much more out there. So I went and did improv with smaller theaters around town. And met some people. I met a guy. There was a theater on La Brea that's not there anymore. And I met this guy who wrote a play while we were in this theater. And he's like, hey, I want you to be in my play. And it was just a small play. And there was like five people in the cast. And we did it. And it was really fun. Nothing came out of it. And then like a year later, he calls me. And he's like, I'm doing a play that my friend from New York, Dave Juskow. Do you know Dave Juskow?
I don't.
He's a New York comedy guy, and like he's really tight with Dave Attell, and like he's that old school era of comedy. And he had written this play, and he came to LA. It was supposed to be a pilot, and then he did it as a play to pitch it, which was really weird. But one of the guys, 2 days before the play, just dropped out and bailed, like on a coke bender, and like fled town. And they needed somebody that could play guitar and be funny. And so he goes, you're the first person I thought of. You should talk to Dave, who wrote the play. And I met him that day. And he's like, you're it. You're in. And so I did that play. And it turns out Dave Juskow, best friends with Sarah Silverman. And she came to opening night. And we just started talking after the play. And she was like, you're really funny. And we sat out on the front steps and smoked a joint together. And like, hung out basically every day for like a year after that.
That's
like,
amazing.
We immediately clicked. And that changed my life. You know, my friend Jim Giordano, who got me into this play. I mean, it's a whole series of steps, but, you know, if it wasn't for the Groundlings kicking me out, I wouldn't have met Jim. And if it wasn't for Jim, I wouldn't have
done this play.
It really is. Yeah. It's like butterfly effect shit.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have the career I have now if it wasn't for... I've done everything that Sarah has done, except for her current show. I'm not super political, but like... yeah, I've done pilots with her that never went.
Why have you not done her current show? Is it something you don't want to do? It's not, you're not going to ask her to do it?
It's not a narrative. So, I mean, that's probably a big part of why it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
I mean, if it goes on for a long period of time, I would maybe probably show up in it at some point. But.
Yeah. Does she do anything bad? No, right? Everything she does is amazing, in my humble opinion.
Well, we did a few pilots that never that saw the light of day that were really funny. Like, we did one like a couple years ago that Sarah didn't write. It was written by someone else for her, and it was really good, but it just didn't seem like the right thing for Sarah.
Yeah.
And before her Comedy Central show, the Sarah Silverman program, she wrote a pilot for, I don't think it was for Comedy Central, I think it was for HBO. Mm-hmm. And she wrote it with Larry Charles, who was an executive producer on Seinfeld.
Yeah. Cheers?
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Am I crazy? No.
He directed the Borat movie.
Okay.
He's a person you don't know by face, but his
I've
name.
I've seen his name. Yeah.
You see his name in everything really funny. Like, he's an amazingly talented writer. And so he wrote a pilot with Sarah, and it was her and Paul Rudd and Kevin Corrigan and myself. And it was really funny, but it's also just right after 9/11.
Oh, jeez.
There's so
and
many.
It was about 9/11.
Oh, no. Man.
I don't think they were ready for that yet.
No. There's so too many soon. Pilots that I think probably could have had like amazing success had they just been born.
Yeah,
had
yeah.
just been released and like the tight execs like
yeah,
know,
yeah.
didn't think the way they did.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, happens all the time.
But isn't it cool how like a rejection can like...
Yes.
Like snowball into something really
if
positive.
If you had told me, and a lot of people did tell me this, people who had been kicked out of the Groundlings before me, who had I had become friends with, who said, you know, when I was in this period of horrible depression, like, look, I know how bummed you are. I've been there before, but this may very well be the best thing that has ever happened to
right.
you.
And you're like, fuck
at,
you.
At the time, I would have been like, eat shit, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's what I say every time, like, a dude, like, hurts me.
Yeah.
All my girlfriends.
Oh, for sure.
Always like, this is the best thing. You're going to live your life now. And that's not, nothing happens usually.
Yeah. I tell any of my friends who are, like, a lot younger than me, you know, like, who are in their 20s, late 20s, early 30s, who have had breakups that are just, like, left them devastated and depressed. I'm like...
It's a good thing.
Just wait. 5 years from now, you are going to be like, I cannot... You will look back at this person and go,
ew.
I can't believe I was so hurt by them.
Yeah.
I know.
And it's almost every time.
I feel old because I started getting people wanting me to mentor them. And they're like, I'm like, what? And like, so this like 23-year-old is like going through this breakup and she wants to get into comedy and all this stuff. And she's like really hurt by this breakup. And I'm like, this is fucking nothing. Like,
yeah.
You just fucking wait. And it gets...
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
These early breakups,
they're,
you know...
They're really positive.
And they set the tone for your taste in people and your red flags when you're fucking older.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always say, like, I think it was a tweet. Someone's like, if you list all the people that you've had in your life with relationships, you can see a flow chart of your mental illness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
Totally.
And it's so true. And it's like, oh, I got better and I learned this from this.
Yeah.
And like... It does help. But see, even career-wise, I think, like, you know, getting kicked out of the Groundlings, you learn something.
Yeah,
and you build... I mean, my therapist tells me this, and I think therapy has helped me just fucking keep at it.
That's great.
I was gonna... This year, I was like, if I don't... If nothing good happens to me by the end of the year, I quit comedy, I quit writing, I quit everything art. I'm just gonna try to be, like, a copywriter or some shit and just, like, work for the man.
Yeah.
And because, like... You know, I felt like some things just weren't happening monetarily and all that stuff. And so it's like, and then something good happened. So then I was like, oh, I can't do that promise that I made myself.
It's usually when you get to a point where you give yourself an ultimatum that shit usually.
The funny thing
changes.
Is, though, like I've gotten in the past when I was like a little younger, I've gotten rejection letters from like agencies at Gersh and all this stuff that I've mm-hmm. sent. Early pilots too, and they gave, I don't know why, my manager at the time sent me their literally like what they said back, and it was brutal.
Yeah.
And it really hurt.
Yeah, sure.
And it, but you know, it really did though build a callus.
Absolutely.
And now I can go into any production, not any production, most production meetings, and if it doesn't go well, I'm just like, well, okay, there's gonna be maybe more of
you
this.
Have to have that thick skin to be in this business.
It's just like comedy, like, you know, just doing stand up. Like, you're gonna bomb a bunch of times in order before you get good.
I used to go to auditions, even just commercial auditions. I would go and I would be sick to my stomach driving there.
Right.
Sitting in my car, looking at my sides, trying to learn my lines, shaking. I would go into the audition, be holding my sides, and you could literally see my hand shaking and the paper shaking. And then I'd leave and I'd tell my agent, I'd go, I don't know, that might not have been good. And they'd be like, all right, we'll follow through. We'll check up. And they'd write back and say, oh, yeah, it was wrong. You were wrong for this. And I'd be so fucking devastated. But like after, what is it now, 25 years, I don't give a shit. I will just walk in. I still do the work. I learn the lines.
Right.
I make character choices. But I fucking walk in there and I do it how I've interpreted it. And then I walk out and I leave it in there.
Yeah.
Because it might not be anything to do with me. I'll tell you what, I've auditioned twice for Curb Your Enthusiasm. And one of the times I went in and you audition with Larry David.
Yeah.
Like he's in all the auditions because he wants to improvise with the people and see what they're like. It's like a whole day of like him doing this.
Oh, wow. Sounds like Martin Scorsese. He does something similar.
Yeah. And the first time I was really nervous, but I walked in and had a great, great audition. Larry was laughing and all the producers are in there. Like, you know, Larry Charles is in there, Jeff Garlin, everybody. And I think I asked Jeff like a couple weeks later, I saw him at a show and I was like, I thought I did really good at that audition. He's like, yeah, you were great. He goes, it's just a lot of times.
It's not about that.
No, at the end of the audition, Larry will just go, yeah, that last guy was fine. Like it's just the last person he remembers. And it has nothing to do with how good you right. were or how bad
yeah,
you were.
Yeah, I used to do more acting. Now I do mainly writing. And I just remember early on, because I was like on a bunch of Nickelodeon shows, because I was over 18 and I looked 12, and I still look 12. But I just was remembered like why I stopped doing acting was because of that reason. I was like, oh, I can work for ages on this craft and be the funniest person and the right person. But like if the casting director just happened to, there's also so many people just like me.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And maybe has like one person has a little bit more of an edge. It's theirs.
Yeah.
So I just felt like, well, at least with writing, I can control it.
Right.
I can really create something that's mine and own it and like.
Sure.
Take time to hone it. I mean, yeah. Even the fact that like a couple years ago, an agent said no, and now a bigger agent was like, please.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Like, I just feel like, oh, so you can improve. Like, you can like sit back and work on it and everything. And I can really, it's not like she was having a bad day that day when I came into audition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's... I felt, you know, that I get a little bit more, I feel like a little bit more in control. And also like when you write, you can write in your closet.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily act whenever you want. You need like a director and you know, it's like you got to get all the conditions.
Yeah.
So now I guess, do you approach acting completely differently as you did, like, I guess when you started out, now that you're more seasoned and callous, I guess.
His hand's definitely not shaking at the,
Do you get nervous?
It's all about, no, it's all confident. The only time I've been nervous recently was I auditioned for a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, I'd be nervous.
And I was so fucking nervous. I love them so much. They may be my favorite directors, writers. And it wasn't even for a movie they were directing. They just wrote it and were producing it. And George Clooney was directing it. And I was like, that's still fucking cool.
No, that's amazing. I'd be shaking in my boots.
And so I thought the script was really funny. And so I like spent like a whole week just reading it over and over and over and trying to picture it. And I worked out the audition where I was actually like standing and it was kind of a physical audition where I had to move here and there, and I had it all just like choreographed basically. And I go to their casting directors. It's the same woman who's cast like all their movies. I think her name's like something Chenoweth, but a very famous casting director. And so I was nervous about seeing her, and I go and there's nobody in the lobby. It's just me sitting there. And then she just walks in. There isn't even an assistant. And she's like, Steve? I go, yeah. She's like, all right, follow me. And we go into a room that is not even a room. It is more like a hallway. It is like 10 feet long by about 4.5 feet wide.
And that's a walk-in closet.
And there are two chairs facing each other narrow-wise.
Oh, like, weird. That's really God. Weird.
So she sits down across from me.
Oh, boy.
And our knees are almost touching.
Oh, my God.
And she's got a camera right between us.
Oh, no.
And I was immediately thrown off because she's like, sit down. And in my head, I'm like, I have worked all this out standing up. And even if there wasn't a chair, there's not enough fucking room in here.
I know.
And so I immediately couldn't remember any of the lines. Luckily, I had them in front of me, but it was back to the handshaking.
Right.
And like, it was one of the worst auditions I've had in like 10 years.
Huh.
And I walked out of there going, I'm never going to do one of their movies because she's never going to bring me back in here.
Right.
There's like three casting directors that are really powerful in Hollywood, and I'm so scared of all of them.
Yeah. She was one I really wanted to audition for. Allison Jones.
Yeah, she's infamous.
Who's gotten me work and is awesome. In fact, I reached out to my agents like a year or so ago going, why don't I ever go audition for Allison Jones?
I'm surprised she hasn't just come up with like her own production company at this point because she's so infamous.
For real. Like she's the one. And I go, she books all this stuff and I never book anything for her. My agents were like, you've done this that she was...
Oh.
She was casting and it's just she didn't bring you in. She's like, let's just have this
guy. That's great.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay.
So I have auditioned for her then. Thank you.
Yeah, basically.
So other than Curb, are there any other... What's the like a big show that you wish you got that you did not get?
That I did audition for?
Yes. Or is there one that you wish you could be on that you have not auditioned for?
I would love to be on Better Call Saul. Anytime I see someone, even in just like a small character actory role... Someone that I know.
That show's so fucking good.
Fuck, it's so good.
Michael McKean was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I love that show.
Is that like your dreams to be on that show? Like, what's your dream right now?
Oof, boy. Movie. I would love to do more movies, yeah.
Well, hopefully mine will get produced.
Yeah, make that happen.
Starring.
Is it the script that I read? You sent me a script. Like,
I did not send you a script.
Yeah, you did.
You did?
Yeah.
A while ago?
Yeah. Long time ago.
Fuck, then no.
It's not the same one?
No.
Burn it, please.
Please no, burn totally it. Kidding,
it was good.
No, burn it. No, it's a feature. But that's the thing. It's like when you are writing a feature, you do actually like it helps so much when you like precast it in your head. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not going to get that person.
Yeah.
We like my writing partner and I, we like literally... She's fancy. She's got a printer. We printed out pictures.
Whoa.
Colored pictures of like, you know... people who we think we
dream
want.
Dream cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because it helps us write for that.
Yeah, that absolutely helps.
Honestly, I feel like if you want to be an actor, you got to get buddy with like casting directors, but also the writers, because sometimes they'll just write a part for you.
Also, fucking, here's a word of advice to anybody. Be fucking nice to everybody you meet.
That's just a general... I mean, and that's like a general rule for like, I think, any industry. But like, I feel like especially in Hollywood, word gets out if you're not nice. And I know really, really, really talented, like genius people, but they're just not nice.
Yeah.
And I think that they would do... They're doing okay, but I think they would like be taking over the world if they were just a little kinder to people and not assholes to work with.
True.
And you never know when you're in class with some idiot at UCB or Groundlings... if they're going to be the next fucking huge writer, actor, director, and...
I'm nervous there's, like, someone's going to spread rumors about me that I'm, like, an awful person. So I'm just always extra nice.
Yeah.
But...
the way you have to go?
Also, it's just, like, I don't want to...
Also, yeah, just why wouldn't you be nice?
But, like, I don't want to get treated like an asshole, so why would I treat other people like an asshole?
Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, some of the biggest names that I've met where I was shaking in the room, like when I met Paul Feig, I had sweat dripping down my back and it was December and in the morning and I had a meeting with him at 9 a.m. and I got there at 8:45 like an idiot.
Oh, I'm half an hour late or early to everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was half an hour early, but I went to the office at 8:45. It wasn't even open yet.
Oh. Yeah.
His assistant like, comes in and with a coffee and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I let me just get
that's
in.
That's not bad though. I mean, that lights. I would think that looks good. Like,
yeah.
Oh wow, she's really serious. She's here early.
Or just like a total.
I just had a kid come to an interview with me a day early, but 7 minutes late for the time he should have been there.
That's bad.
Yeah. He also didn't bring his resume. He didn't get
there. Let me ask you this: Was Paul wearing a suit?
Of course. I've never not seen him in a suit.
Ever.
And then I asked him again when I saw him. I was like, when do you not wear a suit? He's like, well, sometimes if I'm in my New York apartment writing, I'll wear a t-shirt.
A t-shirt.
Wow. And I actually saw a picture of him on Instagram wearing a t-shirt. And it was
you
very
can see
exciting.
Him in his old acting roles.
No, but like a current picture.
Oh, that would be
weird.
It's
jarring. I know, right?
I once ran into Paul F. Tompkins at Gelson's on a Sunday morning at like 8 in the morning.
That's weird.
And
no mustache wax.
And he was in sweats. And it freaked me out. yeah. so badly.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's some people really just funny. Belong in a suit. But then there's yeah. some people, like if I saw Mark Zuckerberg in a suit, I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Remember when he was in the Supreme Court? Or not, what was it, on Congress? He was sitting there. Yeah. He looked so weird in his weird suit.
And looked like a little kid dressed up for his bar mitzvah.
Exactly.
I was like, someone put a t-shirt on this poor guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about some of Steve's art that's going. Like you.
Yeah, you're a really good photographer.
Yeah.
Oh,
thanks.
I was
going to say that. Like, yeah. Your Instagram is awesome. And obviously, you. So you've had friends and lovers that were photographers. Do you think is that where you've developed your love of that? Or were you always kind of a photographer kind of guy?
You know, it's weird. It developed late because when I was an art student, I took a photography class. I was like, this will be cool. And it was also when I had met the girl that I ended up dating for 6 years. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll take this photography class. We'll be in the same class.
Right.
We'll be in class together. I get to hang out with her. And this was 90, this was like 90 or 91, and it was no digital cameras. So it was like photography class was the fun part, going out and shooting stuff, and then going into a dark room with chemicals and like, it was such a long process. And maybe I do have ADD. I didn't have the patience to develop film. And
now you're fine.
So I just well, yeah. stopped. And then when I was working on the Jimmy Kimmel show, I was like, oh my God, I'm really doing myself a disservice by not having a camera around, because I'm backstage and like, I get to see all these concerts, you know, out in the back lot, you know, on their stage, and I can stand like right in front of the gate.
It's
and like,
so cool.
I was like, I should be taking photos. And so I bought like a nice Canon camera, and I would just ask all the cameramen like on the show for tips and like, what does this mean? Or how do I make
can
it
I adjust
more
the
blurry?
Aperture? Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, how do I make it more blurry in the background so it looks cooler?
And now you take really amazing photos.
And now, is this something that you do? Did you just ask, or did you actually, seriously, like, did you actually learn? Do you now know, okay, now I got to open up the thing?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the
I've learned.
Go.
I've spent numerous hours on YouTube, like, looking at tutorials.
Yeah.
And
but it shows. You're really good.
Thank you. It's yeah, it's,
isn't YouTube the greatest? I always think back when somebody says they learned something on YouTube. Years ago, Alex Sulkin told us he learned how to play the piano on YouTube, and I'm
no fucking way.
I'm like, that's fucking
he's
amazing.
He's a really good piano player too.
Yeah, he learned on YouTube. Isn't that amazing?
Holy shit.
Yeah,
I just don't want a surgeon that's like, I learned it on YouTube.
How'd you do that appendicitis? YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, it got to a point where I was like, I think I can learn anything I want on YouTube. And like, I remember there was one summer the air conditioning on my car was not working and I wasn't making a lot of money. I think I might even have been, no, I don't know what I was doing for work, but it might have been pre-Kimmel, like still in reality show days. And I was just like, I got to figure out how to fix this myself. And I went on YouTube, did a search, and I'm like, oh, shit. And learned that I can just go to Pep Boys, buy a can of Freon.
Oh, wow.
And like just fill the Freon myself for like $12 for the bottle of Freon. And my car's now fixed. And I have air conditioning, and it took
me
10...
Don't you feel kind of stupid after you find that out? You're like,
oh no, I felt like a superhero. Yeah. I was like, I can fix anything.
Yeah. Now you're a mechanic.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, I can fix a car. I can fix the air conditioning.
I'm like such a bad feminist. I'm like, I need a boy to help me fix everything. I need a boy. Like, I got my plates for my new car, and they're still not on. I've had my car for like 2 months, and it's like,
I just
don't want to pull out the screwdriver.
Do you have nothing on the back? Like you
about
like
nothing about Camino Real dealership.
Okay, California is the most amazing. I grew up in New Jersey. California is the most amazing state in that you can drive around without plates for. I knew a guy who drove around without plates for years.
All I
he
did
had
too.
Was West Coast Customs as the picture. He never got pulled over ever. I don't understand this. In New Jersey, I swear to God, you're on the road 5 minutes without a license plate.
Okay,
you're under arrest.
Here's
you're not
the
even
thing.
Pulled over.
I want to see a really really old car with that with like the dealership
West
thing.
Coast Customs.
Yeah. Like a really like a 94 Camry.
This
like,
was yeah.
Like, what?
He actually had borrowed. Shaq had a car built for him. It was not a new car. It was flashy and stuff. But yeah, it just had West Coast Customs. I'm like, how are you driving around? That's how it happened. You have two podcasts.
Yeah, let's plug those.
That's really one now.
Okay, so you don't do
I don't do
but you do. I know that sounded like I didn't know what he was talking about.
I did about 100 episodes of that one though.
Yeah,
that's good. Good for you.
you.
It's funny because I cut out vocal pauses and people will think that I left the vocal pause into the in the show. But the current one is we're not doctors.
We're no doctors.
We're no doctors. Yeah. And I cracked
with
up.
Occasionally busy Phillips.
Now she's busy.
This is like
she's really busy.
She is busy.
I don't want to push things on people, but just knowing Eden's tweets, this is the subject matter is Eden. Like when I heard the subject matter, I went, wait, Eden has tweeted about this many times. Like essentially... Wow. You think you're dying of things, and you're looking at
I've wanted to have you on for a while. But
you're in my brain.
But because of the nature of the podcast and its medical-related stuff, I'm always apprehensive to ask people to do the podcast, especially with, like, when it comes to serious, like, medical issues or procedures like you had done. I'm like... I don't want to feel like
There's like, this is the thing. I just did a podcast a couple of weeks ago and he's like, oh, so I've looked you up, but I listened to other podcasts you were a guest on and I'm not going to talk about your mastectomy because you've talked about it in like literally every single one.
Oh, okay.
So I'm open about it. You shouldn't be nervous.
Your bigger problem is waking up in the morning and going, oh, I have this on my neck.
Yeah,
I'm dying.
I'm dying. Absolutely.
Something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's me too. And also now hearing about your broken hips. I'm like, you're an ideal guest.
I went to the doctor on Friday and he was like, you're stressed. This is why this is happening. And I'm like, and I just, maybe it's because all the Brett Kavanaugh thing and like people being like,
of course,
guys are like, you're being too emotional. And I'm like, I'm not being hysterical. I'm being hysterical yelling. I'm not being hysterical. Sorry, I yelled into that.
Yeah. Well, you have every right to be. Everything seems medieval right now, you know.
So what would you say is your biggest failure, professionally or like not professionally?
Not professionally, I would say relationships.
Okay.
You know, this is so fucking weird to me, but like every relationship I've had since the girl that I was talking about, the photographer who I lived with for 6 years.
Sure.
Every relationship since then, and I think I know why, but has been shorter and shorter and shorter. And I think part of that is because I now know the red flags. I know really early on, like, you just got to cut this one loose. Otherwise, you're going to end up, you know, really being an asshole. And I don't want to, you know, ghost somebody and...
Sure.
Because I've done that in the past when I was in my 20s and was afraid to break up with a girl, like just became fucking emotionally unavailable, which is so fucking shitty.
Yeah.
So now I know the signs, but it's like, fuck, I'm almost 50. My parents had 3 kids and like a house. Yeah. And
different time.
It's true.
I'm 44 and single, so I have that same thing going on in my mind. I'm like, wow, my parents were married. They had 3 kids at this point.
I know. My mom had a kid at 24. I'm 31, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it's
scary.
It's terrifying. Yeah.
I got like an 8-year-old kid or a 7-year-old. It's weird.
Yeah.
Well, what's even weirder, at 44 now, like all my friends have like teenagers graduating high school.
And that's
weird. Yeah. That's scary as shit, man. Yeah. And they all can't believe how old their kids are on Facebook. I can't believe my kid is already 12. What do you mean can't believe? It's been like, I just don't
understand. It's been 12 years. Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah. It's pretty, that's how time works. It's kind of linear. I know it's a circle at the end of the day, but okay. So final question for you. Do you want to?
Career wise though, I don't feel failure. I don't feel like I've had any failures. I've had
good
stuff that didn't go.
But it worked out.
10 years ago where I would have been like, I'm a fucking failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But everything, you know, like we discussed earlier, has led to other awesome things.
Yeah. So now you can look back and be okay with Groundlings. But
oh my God,
is there any animosity
I've
there?
Even gone back and performed there since.
Or like, what about teaching? Would you go teach if they asked you to? Would you teach class at the Groundlings?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd be qualified to anymore because I don't remember a lot of the... you know, specifics, but...
But was there a period of time where you were like, fuck them?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, okay. I did not set foot back in that place for probably 15 years.
Wow, okay, that's...
And then, you know, after Sarah's show on Comedy Central, when I, like, was actually working, and they were like, hey, you know, I had friends who were still in the company, and they're like, hey, would you want to come do this improv show Thursday night? And I was like... You know what? I would like to do that. I've always wanted to do it when I was a student.
Huh. That's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
So, Steve, what's your favorite charity? Hardest question.
Fuck, that is a hard question.
I know. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it's so hard for people, but I have some suggestions if you want one. About like eight suggestions.
Second. Give him a second to think about
it. I mean, I'm always giving to Red Cross, you know, when there's
okay. The
a lot of natural disasters. Red Cross, there's so many pet adoption charities.
Whatever you want.
Okay, what's your favorite pet adoption charity? Do you have one in your mind?
Yeah, whatever needs
pets
money.
Pets are good.
Steve, I got a heart out.
You do have a heart out?
You can
edit.
Pick one.
You can absolutely edit this shit.
I want to keep this
ACLU. Okay. Let's say ACLU.
That's two in a row for ACLU.
No,
wow.
Is that?
Yeah.
Well, no, let's do Red Cross then.
Okay. Red Cross, $100 in Steve Agee's name. Not a G or not a G, but when.
Not Rory Scoble, everybody.
My sister's name is actually
Runder Scumble.
That's so weird. My sister's name is a D. A-D-I, though.
My sister's name, too.
Oh, really?
A D or A-D?
A-D-I is my sister's.
It's A-D. Yeah. Red Cross, $100.
It's
a Jew thing.
What is...
It means my jewel. Yeah.
What is Eden?
It's Gan Eden, which is the Garden of Eden.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And Guy means my valley in Hebrew. So there you go.
There you go, Hebrew lesson at the end of the...
You got it. You're due to do some more Hebrew lessons in your car.
I know. I haven't done them in a while. I'll do them again.
Those are good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on another episode
My pleasure.
Of Failing Up, and everybody for listening.
Thanks everyone. You.